This is like a Disney conference. Do I still have the job? How you doing? Yeah,
I told you down the theater the other day.
That's right.
Julie, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. We were getting ready to interview Label.
Yeah, we did Label, okay. And we did you know, a whole bunch there. So
that's right.
You were had a race out the door.
I was. You know,
you were,
I was
you
doing
were
that
kind
day.
Of fried, I think, from that. You know.
Oh no, I had to run up and down the stairs.
Oh, is that what?
I had to run up and down the stairs because I had to do this stuff because I had to stay in shape for Mufasa. He's like a 350-pound crazy lion. So, you know, it's like he does things on stage that I go, what was that? The other night it was, you know, it's a boneyard. Have you seen the show?
Yeah,
it's a huge boneyard, right?
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to attack the hyenas and come up the boneyard and come down the other side of the boneyard like a normal person and attack the hyenas, right? But I'm at the top step of the boneyard, and it's about 10 feet off the ground. And Mufasa takes over. Because one of the hyenas did something they never did before. He looks up at me and licks his tongue at me. So I leapt from 10 feet. Up in the middle of the air, I'm going, Mufasa! Did you do that? Oh, God. These characters, they try to take you over. I better let you all.
Yeah. Can you move in just a little bit
to the microphone?
Yeah, so we're not too far from the mic.
Can I feel like
turn
the
that,
Pope?
Turn the ABC mic just a little more toward you.
There you go.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about Lion King before we get started with Mermaid?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Just ask me any question you like.
Okay.
Any
all
question.
Right. Yeah. It's a different kind of Lion King, I think, that people are going to see on Broadway. Don't you think so?
Oh, I know so. One of the first challenges for me was to accept the role. Because when they told me they were doing the Lion King, I hadn't seen the Lion King, but I knew that it was a cartoon. And my first fear was Bert Lahr. Can't do Bert Lahr. I'm almost 50 years old. I'm not putting on a lion suit. I didn't do cats, so I can't. So I said, kept saying to Julie, no, I don't think so. I'm going to pass on this. And she said, no, you got to do this. You got to do this. She's very persistent. I'm sure you talked to her. So she said, I'm going to send you one of my drawings. She's going to send me a concept in the mail. Some lowly actor. So I figured, well, already, that's pretty good. So I get the thing, and I see this picture of Mufasa. And immediately I know where she's going with this. She doesn't want us to be lions. We're going to be like a people portraying this story, this simple fable, like at a giant campfire in the savannah, you know, taking on the skin, taking on the attributes of these creatures. And I went, love it, let's do this. And from that point on, it's been just a challenge to bring it to life.
What kind of a voice did you decide to use? Or was there any question about how you would do
well,
it?
Well, God decided that was Jerry Joe Jones. But it's like, she knew that that was. She said I could watch the film once, and rightly so. I watched the film once, and I'm going, God, let me see if I can. Nobody can get that low, right? But then I realized that what I would be doing would be just a little removed from what Jimmy had to do, because Jimmy had to do a voice, and I know what that's about because I did Sebastian. But I would have to bring also a physicality to this creature, which would go beyond just hearing this rumbling voice. He has to have a powerful voice, but he also has to be a very powerful individual too. I mean, he's the Lion King, you know. So it's kind of daunting. That was more daunting than trying to worry about whether or not I could do James's voice. You know what I'm saying?
Now, you can still see the faces of the character on stage, too.
Yes.
That's what Julie wanted. But
yes.
Do you like that idea, too? That
oh, yes. I'm more... John Vickery, who does Scar, is more of a masked man, because his both of our masks are operated by servos and cables that run up the back of our neck, so they have different attitudes. I only get to use mine in an aggressive mode. Julie sees me more as a man with a mask. She wants the humanity of Mufasa to come through much more strong than the mask comes through. So the mask sits on my head very regally, and through her efforts I've learned to work the mask in a very Balinese-type fashion or Kabuki fashion, where what the head does, the mask does. You can't just turn, or you can't just bow, or you can't just turn around like this. You have to do very specific, smooth, line motions, which is fascinating. The fascinating thing was about it was just a simple thing like the walk. Like, what does a human being walk like? Took me It took me 4 weeks to come up with this. I crawled around floors, I watched cats, I watched movies of lions, I did all this, and all of a sudden it occurred to me one day, I'm going about this wrong. I'm going about this wrong. So then I started imagining my legs. It's a lion's hind leg. They move very powerfully, slow. These aren't arms. This is the mane that just kind of moves in the wind. And then there's this tube that extends about a good 8 feet away from my body. And then the head is on top of that tube. So what I see is myself moving this huge frame. And she went, "That's it! Whatever you're doing, that's it!" And so we had Mufasa's war. So slowly but surely, everybody, I mean, and Jason, who does, he's done his work, he watches me. And because he's my son, he takes on certain attributes of Mufasa, you know what I mean, from that. So it's been a lot of fun developing this thing. Very challenging.
Challenging to take a movie, which was such a big
yeah.
thing, and make it appealing to all audiences on stage,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And to also, it's also, you have to realize certain things about the animal itself that I don't tend to believe that come out in the show. People ask me things like, what is it about? And I say, well, it's about a father's, to me, it's about a father's responsibility to this child and trying to teach him that he's a part of the circle of life and is so willing to do this that he's willing to give his life to prove, you know, to make sure that this goes on. And I said, where does this come from? Male lions sleep 40 hours a day. That's what most people say. But then I found out that this is not true. This is not true at all. Female lionesses do hunt. They are the hunters in the society. But there's 8 of them, and there's a reason for that. On the savannah, no one can get hurt. There's no doctor that's going to fix your hangnail. You get hurt, you're dead. You're dead. You're just meat for something else. And 8 things hunt more efficiently than one because you can get hurt. But one thing can be indispensable, can be dispensable as protectorate. So that's what the male lion is. I found out that 4 out of 5 cubs on the savannah die to hyena attacks. And that's what Mufasa does. He protects, that's why Simba is always with him. He protects the cubs from the hyena. And through that, he's dispensable because the lionesses can always get a new male lion. This kind of something they know. But he's not sitting around waiting for somebody to bring him ribs and beer, you know, or something like that. And I try to portray that kind of a tender, the new father approach that, you know, I love taking care of Simba. You know, I love taking care of him. During the mermaid, during the filming of it, you have to understand that the mermaid was created in this strange kind of vacuum that would never happen again at Disney because animation is very successful now again. The Little Mermaid came along at a time when if it didn't work, they were going to throw out the baby with the with the wash. And that was going to be the end of it all. So we were all kind of chugging along, desperately trying to do the best work we could possibly do. I mean, animators would draw these enormously beautiful things, and I'd come in and we'd work on the script and do 3 or 4 lines and then hand it to Disney, and they'd look at it for a couple of months and say, okay, here's some more money, draw some more. You know, it wasn't like the big thing it is now, you know. So at the end of it all, we were kind of going, we don't know, we're nervous, our careers are over, we're going to take us out and shoot us for doing this. And then all of a sudden, after we went, it was kind of like watching the producers. And we looked and everybody was like, at the screen like that, it was like, do they like it? And we found out that people did. We were just as surprised as everybody else, and still surprised. But every night I look as I walk on stage and I see these kids that are doing this wonderful performance and I see this huge audience that's loving this and the amount of money that the Lion King has like brought in. And I sit there and I think, if it wasn't for a little red crab. Isn't it funny how the mustard seed thing you know, if you got faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. And, you know, who would ever think? And in just the night of the Oscars with the Little Mermaid, I haven't gotten over that. Because it was like I'm sitting down there and, under the sea, I kissed the girl. Yeah, Bette Midler. Oh, God, I'm up against that. This and that, you know, there's this. Under the sea. What? Under the sea? Are you kidding me? I couldn't imagine that these full-grown people were sitting around in offices with suits on going, oh yes, that's the big one this year. Oh yes, you know what I mean? It must have happened. It must have happened just that way. For a minute, everybody became a child. And with the vision of a child, said, we love this. This is great. You know, we got to give it the best award ever. It's like Joel Siegel was saying a couple of days ago, I was talking to him, he said, and this is one of his beliefs, he already still believes in it, and he seriously believes, he's going to fight for this, that animated characters should be able to be nominated for Academy Awards, because the amount of work acting that is required is totally different than stage acting or movie acting. In fact, it's more difficult, I think. And I can say that as an actor because I've done it all, but you got to understand that what you're trying to do most of the time is to try to act without the benefit of facial emotions. So things that you say don't necessarily sound like they would look if you could use, you know, like I'm angry right now. But you only know I'm angry because my face is falling. I don't sound like I'm angry. So you tend to like do things over and over and over again until they go, that's it. Now the next time, just put the new record. I don't know what I did. We've done it 24 times already. Are you kidding me? So you do it 24 more times, right? And now I know. In the beginning, it used to drive me nuts. But now I know. Now that I'm doing the third Disney project that I'm doing, which is Dinosaur. And I play this character called Crone, who's a massive iguanodon. They kind of call him the Republican. I don't know why. He's like this massive iguanodon, and he's leading this herd of dinosaurs after some disaster has happened. And it's very dramatic, this piece. It's not like Little Mermaid or Lion King at all. We're required to be pure actors in this piece. And it's very difficult to think in terms of what would an iguanodon say and how would an iguanodon say it. And in acting, but if you really think about it and say to yourself, well, did dinosaurs talk? Well, yeah, they must have talked. Well, how did they talk? Well, they made sound. Well, we do too. The only reason why our sounds have become what they are is because we think "an" is an important sound, and "the" is an important sound as opposed to you know what I mean? But what's the difference, okay? So they possibly did talk. And I know people look at me and they say, dinosaurs didn't talk. But yes, if they went, that's talking. Dinosaur style. Now translating it and making it, hello, how are you? That's a difficult part.
So Sam, if there's an afterlife,
yes.
And you've got to come back as an animal, do you want to come back as a crab or a lion?
No, Sebastian gets stepped on a lot. Mufasa is dispensable. Crone, well, he's a dinosaur. You know, there's like bones left of him already. This is like prehistory we're talking about. I often wonder, that's an interesting question. I always thought if I did believe in reincarnation, the last thing I'd want to come back is a tree. I just couldn't think of like being like this with bugs in me. Where's that dog coming from? Where is he going? Can you imagine what a nightmare it is to be a tree? What is that guy doing with that thing? Making a lot of noise.
You've been doing too many Disney movies.
I tell you about it.
Is that
going to
be dinosaurs or dinosaur?
Dinosaur. A fascinating concept. Just a fascinating concept. I can't wait. This is the next level up. From Jurassic Park, these things look real. These things are not little framework things with textures applied upon them. These things are created from the bone, through the tissue, from the muscle, up to the fat, to the last element, skin. and they're being projected against realistic backgrounds from Venezuela and South America. And from what I've seen so far, it's just almost as if you are looking at the real thing. Like they brought these things back to life. And it's incredible.
You got another movie in the works or anything?
That's it.
This is the one that's in the works.
Yeah.
How far along are they?
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. I mean, at first, I guess they thought they would just pop in and I'd growl around as Crone, and then they'd put the stuff into a computer, and there you'd have it. But when they realized, because they're working with super actors, and there's Ossie Davis, Joan Plowright, they realized they had an opportunity to do something, again, monumental. So they said, let's just sit back and take our time. Because they said to me, Sam, let's just take our time. I know we've put it all down, but I think we're going to be doing this a lot to find out exactly what we're going with each emotion, with each frame, just like we did with Little Mermaid, so that we can get something that's so pure that when it's even taken apart, people can see there's a life to it. You know? And that's what I love about Disney. People ask me questions like, what is it like working for the juggernaut? You know, the big Disney moneymaker, And I say, okay, this is my opinion. The pins come falling off. We got some dirt from the real guy, right? And this is what I have to say. And if you think of it in terms of Michelangelo, right? He carves this enormous statue, David, out of a huge block of marble. You think somebody gave him that marble free? To do that kind of monumental artwork, you need monumental money. And somebody who's willing to put their mouth, their money where their mouth is, and say, paint the 15th chapel. You know what I mean? Or something like that. And so I don't put them down. I mean, anybody, any other producer, if Julie Taymor had come to them and said, I want an elephant, or I want a giraffe, I want to be able to go on and calm down. But, this is theater, girl. You can't have that kind of too much money, you know. But Disney went, sure. We have a giraffe. We're going to have an elephant. Okay. And boom, we have this beautiful thing called the Lion King that everybody can appreciate. So as long as they're willing to pour, we're willing to drink.
Tell us how you got the dialect. I know you told the story for Sebastian.
Wow. This is getting really silly. Because I had alternative reasons. This is where it comes from. I was in college and I ran track. And there were two guys from Trinidad. Because Sebastian isn't from Jamaica. He's specifically from Trinidad. And this is what Howard wanted. Howard Ashman, and that's why I got the role as opposed to anybody else, because it's the only accent I knew, which is Trinidad accent. I thought I was not going to get the role. And he was kind of like, when I did it, he went, that's it. That's the voice we're looking for. I had two friends that I ran track with, and they were very island, very nice-looking guys. You know, they were my roommates, and the girls really liked their accent. So I figured I'd become Trinidadian for the whole time I was in school, so I would walk around with them and become this really heavy guy from Trinidad. So I got very good at it. So it had devious reasoning in the beginning.
What's it sound like? Can you still do it?
Oh, Sebastian?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? You want to talk to him? You got to ask him a few questions. He's actually funnier than some.
You remember lots of those lines?
No, man. I got half of them I made up myself.
Remember seeing your voice in the crowd?
Sure I did. The most interesting part about this whole thing is this was in the pre-Robin Williams days when they wouldn't allow you to ad-lib or do anything like that, but they allowed me to. I can say he was the first character that they said, and it was at the last minute. I remember Ron and Don must, Don and Ron, Ron Cousins, Don, they asked me to come back about 10 weeks before the film was released. I'm like, why? I can't, I hate flying. I don't want to fly to California. They said, please come back. We want to try something. I said, okay. Got back to California. They said, Sam, all that stuff we told you you couldn't do for 4 years, you got an hour and a half. Do it. It was the funniest session you ever seen in your life. I was like, I'm doing everything. I was went nuts and ran. They were like, laughing. I didn't think they were going to use the stuff in the movie. I was just telling Jody, the night the movie was supposed to open, because Sebastian was an incidental character in those days, she said, have you seen the film? I went, no, I haven't seen it. She said, you wait till you see Sebastian. They fleshed him out to this incredible character. So I'm in the movie going, I don't remember any of this stuff. And then I realized, It was all from that session, that last session. They went back, and that's what they used, and that was where the goal was. It was in this incredibly crazy little craft.
That's the one that did it.
That's the one that did it. And I'm glad they did that, because otherwise he would have been a stilted little thing that was in two scenes.
And the long-term effect of being a Disney animated character has been good.
Oh, yes, because the one good aspect of it is the fact that I don't want people to think that I'm filthy rich because I work for Walt Disney. That is not the point when you work for Walt Disney. What has happened is I could give back to the people that gave to me. And I don't want to be nicey-nicey, but we opened a school up in the Hudson Valley called the Hudson Valley Conservatory of Fine Arts in an area that's kind of like slow as far as art is concerned. And we always wanted to do that. So the money from that, from the Little Mermaid, instead of buying a yacht, I bought a school, an ark, so to speak, and that's what we do. Someone asked me today, said, how are you funded? And I went, Sebastian, Father, Crone, we're our own, I'm my own non-profit organization. I don't get any of it.
You can do another album? Anything good? You'd like to do that?
I would love to do another album. I think the album thing has gone as far as it should have gone. I'm very honored at winning a gold record for doing children's animation, and it certainly has made me like a household name in the hinterlands where I go and I do concert tours and stuff like that. I don't know. It's everything has changed so much. I was just saying to Jody, Disney has recognized all of a sudden that I can do a bit more than Sebastian. It took years to break the Sebastian mold. And I think Julie had a lot to do with that because she had never seen The Little Mermaid. So she had no idea where this voice was coming from. So she didn't say, oh, you sound like Sebastian doing Mufasa, get out of here. Because that's what I would get for years. Oh, you sound like Sebastian doing the genie. Oh, you sound like Sebastian doing... But now that I've done Mufasa, Crone was a lot easier. Because I think what they've recognized, they've schooled an artist that knows how to do this in front of that microphone, which takes years to learn how to do. So it doesn't matter what the character is anymore. It's somebody who's capable of standing in front of that mic and saying over and over and over again, so how are you today? That wasn't it. So how are you today? I wasn't it. So how are you today? I wasn't it. Without killing people. You understand? So, I've actually run out of this. My God!
Is there
actually
a misunderstanding? Is it traditional animation or computer animation?
It's computer animation. However, that's, we got to find another word for this. Because I think it's the wrong word. I think computer animation brings up an image in people's mind of something that's false, whereas real drawings aren't. It takes just as much animated creativity to create Crone as it does to create The Little Mermaid, because I'm sure they're doing it frame by frame the same way. Someone said to me once, I was talking to someone, and they said, I just love the way in The Little Mermaid that they do that big zoom on Ursula and they get right up to her lips. And I went, there's no zoom. He goes, no. The place where they zoom, I go, there is no zoom. And he goes, there's a zoom. There's a zoom. And the guy said, that's no zoom. I said, well, a camera. I said, no camera. I said, it's an artist drawing. One picture closer. And that kind of dedication to an art form is how I fell in love with Disney in the first place when I was like 8 years old. I've always wanted to work for Disney. I was watching Fantasia. And I think it was the scene with all of the pastoral thing or whatever it is. Whatever the music is. Everything was going on over here and things were leaping about. And as a kid, my mind was all over the screen. And all of a sudden, I looked over on stage left, and a little drop of water went to a leaf. And I went, God, I got to work for people who care about that stuff. You know what I mean? Who cares about what's over in the left-hand frame or a little drop? Nobody's going to see that while all of this is going on. But I saw it. And I knew I had to work with people that specific, that specific about their work, that caring about their work. Just as in The Little Mermaid, every bubble that comes out of our mouth just isn't some little round circle drawn. I mean, there's an artist that followed that bubble all the way to the surface, and every bit of light that touched that bubble, and every bit of force, water force, and pressure that moved it either left or right, or bent it slightly, they put their whole personality in one bubble, or a piece of hair that floated up, you know, up in their hand, or something like that. It's the caring. It's the caring that I love about it. And I finally got a chance to do that. And I'm really, really, really proud of it. I'm not just saying that to like make them give me another job. I really am proud to be in the Disney family.
I asked Label about this, and I know you've got to wrap it up here, but the African-American influence in Lion King is so wonderful, and I'm sure it's personal for everyone who's in the piece. Can you just talk to me about a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a funny thing because even though it's a show out of Africa, and indeed has a lot of African Americans in it, it never strikes me as being an African American show for some strange reason, because we also have Asian, we also have people from South America. It's a show about colors. It's a show about colors. Someone said to me once, you know, you always get it from those kind of reporters who say, well, is it about a black thing here? You know, I mean, what about the color scheme? You know, and I said, I suppose it is about a color scheme, and they get out their little pins and they're ready for some grist, and I go, but you don't understand, it's about beads, too. It's like about putting a brown bead next to a tan bead. Julie's concept is an artistic concept. So the colors of the people are very, very artistically entwined and visual, you know what I mean? And so I'm sure she did recognize the fact that I don't want you standing over here because you're too dark to stand there and you're too light to stand there. But I'm sure it had nothing to do with race, you understand what I'm saying? So, yes, I'm very proud of the fact that the music and all of that is very African, and that I am playing a black African king. I'm very proud of that. But I think I've changed since I've been doing the show. When I look out there now, and I look in the audience's faces, I see a universal fable about man's responsibility, and I say man, woman, man's responsibility to their environment, to each other, to this wonderful thing called the carbon cycle. It somehow translates into the circle of life in our play. You never think the carbon cycle could be this poetic. You heard about it all your life, right?
The carbon cycle. You know how to wrap it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Thank you.